From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, we honor six Coast to Coast guests who have joined the other side. We're going to memorize and, well, it's sort of our memorial to them. Here's what's happening. Rockstar Meatloaf appeared to collapse on stage during a performance in Canada Thursday night. According to reports now, there's not a lot of information. Attendees at the singer's concert in Edmonton, Alberta, said that the Paradise by the Dashboard Light performer was mid-song when he simply fell to the ground. It was not immediately clear what the 68-year-old's condition is as of right now. A Disney official said the company plans to thoroughly review its alligator warning signage around a resort where a two-year-old boy was killed by a reptile that snatched him out of shallow water. Orange County Sheriff Jerry Deming said his department and the state wildlife agency would look into the issues of warning signs around the Seven Seas Lagoon at the Grand Floridian Resort and Spa, where Disney had posted no swimming signs but no warnings about the presence of alligators. Egypt's investigation committee said a Doom plane's cockpit voice recorder has been found and pulled from the Mediterranean Sea. Egypt also said that it spotted and obtained images from the wreckage of the Egypt airplane flying from Paris to Cairo that crashed into the Mediterranean last month, killing all 66 people on board. Maybe we'll finally find out definitively what happened there. CIA Director John Brennan, in a chilling warning on the Islamic State's growing influence, told lawmakers that the U.S.-led efforts to strike at the terror group have not hampered its terrorism capability and global reach, a message that stands in stark contrast to President Obama's more upbeat assessment earlier this week. Brennan, testifying in a very rare open hearing before the Senate Intelligence Committee, said ISIS likely will intensify terror attacks around the world, even as its core fighters come under pressure in Iraq and Syria, including by deploying operatives for further attacks on the West. Let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi, noted author who writes for WND.com. Jerry, your reaction to the CIA director's chilling report?
Well, George, I was actually very surprised. I mean, President Obama gave a clear assessment of ISIS, which he calls ISIL, you know, for a completely different characterization of the terrorist group. But basically, President Obama is saying, you know, we've defeated it. The numbers are diminishing in ISIS. The territory is being lost. And then here comes John Brennan, who is the head of the CIA, in this open briefing with the Senate Intelligence Committee, and gives a very frightening warning that if ISIL is being defeated on the battlefield, it's extending its reach into Europe and the United States, and we can expect more terrorist attacks in both Europe and here in America. It's, you know, completely surprising that you have the CIA head give a very different intelligence assessment of ISIS than the President of the United States.
You know, I think social network needs to do a better job, Jerry, in shutting down these sites, because ISIS communicates with a lot of their members through social networking. We need to eliminate that for sure. And there's still something else going on that's very strange to me. The financing, their oil production, something's weird. How they get their weapons, I just can't put my finger on it yet.
Well, I think, George, you're right on both counts. I think, first of all, the ability of ISIS to communicate with social networks has got to be more carefully monitored by the social networks and shut down. I mean, lives are at stake here, as we saw in the Orlando massacre. I mean, these are very, very frightening possibilities. And secondly, yes, you're right, George, there's still financing coming into ISIS. And as long as ISIS has money, it's going to remain very dangerous.
I mean, he was saying today, the CIA director, that ISIS has the ability, Jerry, to generate at least tens of millions of dollars in revenue each month. I mean, they say it's from taxation and sales of crude oil. I mean, we got to get after the people who are buying this stuff.
Well, and there's a whole black market on the crude oil that ISIS is selling, and we've got to deal with the countries who are buying the oil to shut it down. But again, George, you know, as long as these terrorist groups remain in the battlefield, they're going to remain very dangerous. They're going to have an appeal to other potentially radical Muslims around the world, especially in Europe and the United States. And I think John Brennan's assessment today in the Senate Intelligence Committee has got to be taken very seriously. I thought it was very frightening testimony.
I think he stopped short a little bit, Jerry. I think he should have told us what he probably knows, and that is who is financing them, where they're getting the money, how they got to the oil fields. Where are the oil fields? Are they just in Iraq? Are they in Libya? Where are they? He needs to tell us more.
Well, I agree entirely, Jordan. It was quite surprising that the head of the CIA, John Brennan, went so far afield of President Obama, basically repudiating President Obama, trying to tell the world ISIS is still a very serious threat, when, you know, President Obama gave a very different message earlier this week when he was assessing the Orlando massacre. And I was quite surprised, really, and I'm still kind of in a little bit of shock, but taking it very seriously, that John Brennan did go that far afield to President Obama.
Yeah, you're right about that. Jerry, thank you so much. At least 75 dogs have been rescued from a Michigan home over the course of 2 days after a neighbor complained of constant barking and a foul odor, I guess so. The St. Clair County Sheriff's Animal Control Division initially responded to the home. The homeowner let them into the house, where the county's animal control officer and two deputies found the dogs covered in all kinds of junk. NOAA forecasters say 55% chance of a G1 class geomagnetic storm. That's not very big, but it could happen. Let's check in now with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center on his weekly update. Peter, what do you got for us?
Well, good evening, George. All sorts of interesting things have been taking place around this world over the last week or so. I'd like to kick it off, though, by returning to the Contact in the Desert events for just a moment. There was a guest on Coast, I believe Saturday night, Melinda Leslie, very well known in the UFO community, who detailed some of the things they saw during the night sky viewing session that she directed. And I listened very carefully to that program and was intrigued. What I didn't know at the time is at 4 o'clock in the morning preceding her appearance on Coast, she had submitted a very elegant written report of what had happened with all the details. We just updated the UFO Center website tonight, and her very nice report is posted there. She directed us to some very nice video. I'm very skeptical, George, when it comes to photographic evidence. I've seen so many pictures of lens flares and birds and insects that I think I've become a little bit jaded, but I recommend people take a close look at her very nice report and look at the video that she's made available. I would like to close on that case just by thanking her. She went overboard to share that information with us, and I'm terribly grateful to her, and also to Dick and Marilyn Carlson of the Oklahoma UFO Paranormal team, who I think were the actual photographers. Very interesting shots, night shots of some unusual activity in the night sky during contact in the desert. I'm sure you would have been there, George, save for the fact that I'm sure you were washing down some birthday cake with medicinal grade libation from time to time.
I thought I was on the craft myself, Jerry.
A couple quick reports from Anchorage, Alaska. 3 mornings ago, a man and wife were sound asleep in their bedroom in Anchorage. 1:13 in the morning, they recorded the time, good witnesses. And both of them were awakened at the same instant by an immensely bright flash in their bedroom. Woke them both up. They went to the window, had to open the curtains. You always, at this time of year, I'm sure they have the windows or the curtains closed because it's still half light up there at midnight in Anchorage this time of year. Didn't see a thing, but this has happened to them before. And I mention this case in particular because a few weeks ago I was talking about a similar case in Telluride, Colorado. A woman there, very responsible party, an executive, working with a company in Telluride, had a similar experience. It just scared the daylights out of her. That was on the 7th of May. On the 6th of May, you may recall, I think it was last week, I reported about a couple who were on a sailboat in Lake Coeur d'Alene who were awakened by intensely bright light streaming through the portholes and the cracks in their sailboat. This type of thing is going on all the time. I'm getting frequent reports of people awakened by very bright lights in their bedrooms and elsewhere. I have no explanation for it. I have no guarantee that it's UFO related, but it's very interesting. And if people have had those experiences, I'd be most grateful if they'd report them. Another report from Anchorage. This one is from 38 years ago, March 28, 1978, from a fellow who was in the Alaska Defense Force up there. He was a radar operator. They had an object come down out of the sky and hover over their base. It was so dramatic a sighting that they locked the base. The commanders locked the base, had every one of the personnel there sign non-disclosure agreements. The amazing thing about the UFO field, George, to me, is how people can experience these events but wait 38 years to report them or talk about them. It's even more interesting than the UFOs themselves, in my opinion. Shortly after the sighting in Anchorage two nights ago, a fellow was opening a swimming pool. He's a swimming pool lifeguard on Mercer Island, just east of Seattle, just on the east side of Lake Washington. At 4:30 in the morning, good God, who would want to be swimming laps at 4:30 in the morning?
All depends. You never know, Peter.
You never know. He reports that a disc-shaped cluster or an orange object shaped like a disc that was shedding sparks just streaked right overhead. He quickly looked up. He reports that it suddenly turned and shot off to the south. Very interesting report, and that's posted. And I will close with a report we received from San Antonio just an hour and a half ago. Young woman and her daughter and her mother-in-law saw either a rectangular or a rhomboid-shaped craft, white lights in all four corners and a red light in the center. I've heard that kind of description I can't say how many times. It hovered over their home. It shot off. It came back and shot off again. We don't have that report posted, but it'll be posted next week. Very, very interesting sighting in San Antonio tonight.
And you can track Peter's website, UFOCenter.com. What's going on with the world's economy? How will that affect all of us? The Federal Reserve holding this pat on interest rates, and the Brits are thinking of leaving the European Union, and what does that mean to all of us? Up next, Gerald Salente from the TrendsResearch.com group. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Gerald Salente. Gerald, of course, is the founder and director of the Trends Research Institute, the number one trend analyst. Gerald accurately forecasted the dot-com meltdown, the 1997 Asian currency crisis, the 87 world stock market crash, increased terrorism against America. Lots of things to talk with you about. Gerald, welcome back to the program, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, George. Always great being on with you.
Gerald, this tragedy in Orlando over the weekend, I wanted to get your thoughts on that. I'm sure this was a individual who was crazed, upset. He probably acted alone, and that's not to say his wife wasn't aware of it, but I don't think he was in constant communication with ISIS. But nonetheless, you know, he did this horrible, horrible deed. But your thoughts on this and the threat that these things are going to continue?
Well, the threat that they're going to continue with is that, you know, the guy is, I agree exactly with what you said. This is some crazy guy. It looks like a lone wolf kind of incident. And, you know, we're a population of, what, 7.2 billion people. So you're always going to find crazies. But then there are the other elements of this as well. And it's the continuation of what is fostering this radicalism. And it's a subject that is, you know, it's off the radar and not allowed to be talked about. And part of it is that, you know, look what's going on in Iraq now. Again, you know, it hasn't ended after that war began, what, in 2003?
Yeah.
Over,
yeah.
What, 1 million people killed, a country destroyed? It sets up, so as I say it as a guy myself, you know, if my family was slaughtered, everybody I love is dead, my country is ruined, I have no future, am I a target as a young kid to be swayed by a radical group?
Yes, and also your friends will be, and their friends, and it begins to grow that way.
And then let's go to Afghanistan. Let's take a trip to Syria.
And Libya.
You got it. So, as I see it, what they did with this, and you were also mentioning earlier about President Obama's speech earlier in the week, and then John Brennan's reply to it, about how Obama was bragging about how we're defeating ISIS and all the progress is being made. Now, here's a guy that comes out, Obama, and said it's a lone wolf incident, and the guy was clearly out of his mind, but yet he used his whole speech to keep promoting more war.
Yeah. And, Gerald, as we look at things, and there's so many things I want to talk with you about tonight and just the time we've got with you. Got to get you back for a longer show. But in this case with ISIS, I mean, you look at economics. You look at trends. How in the world can an organization like this be so cohesive, get weapons, have oil, have millions of dollars coming in every day? Millions of dollars coming. I couldn't set up a business like that if I wanted to. Who's behind this?
Well, you know, there are a lot of reports coming out that, you know, members of the Arab League are behind this. They're the ones that also helped fund the overthrow of Gaddafi by supporting these people. And then there's also the reports coming out that Turkey's buying a lot of this oil.
Why aren't we attacking these oil fields that they're apparently controlling, or at least get the workers? They've got to have workers there. Are they doing this under duress?
Well,
I don't get it.
Again, look what's going on in Libya. Who took over after Gaddafi? These are some. Here they are.
Yeah.
They're the militant groups that the Saudis and the United States supported to overthrow Gaddafi. And now that country's in total turmoil, and that was the richest nation in Africa, and now it's spread over to Tunisia, into Syria, destabilizing into Egypt. There's been nothing of that has come from these wars other than more chaos, and there's no victory in sight, despite what President Obama led the country to believe in his speech earlier this week.
The Brits are seriously thinking of leaving the European Union. As a outsider living in the United States, you know, trying to take care of his own situation with his family and things, I look at this and go, so what? Is it a big deal? What's going on there?
I agree with you 100%. So what? And again, that's the other part of the propaganda. We had President Obama go over there and say that the Brits should stay in or else they'll be at the back of the queue. And, of course, Americans never use that line, you know, the back of the line. Like, we don't use the word queue. And in trying to convince the British to stay into the European Union, it has absolutely nothing to do with us. And, you know, people always say, you know, I always say we cannot forecast the future. Nobody could forecast trends. You can see where they're going, you could predict them, but you can't really forecast. You can't predict the future. You can get a good view of it, and here's the example. They were ready, all the polls coming out, that the British people were ready now to leave the European Union. They're tired of being ruled by Brussels. They're not seeing growth in their economy. They have the same kind of lousy bank, central bank ruling them, and it's not working. They want to pull out. Now, all of a sudden, this parliament member was killed today.
Yeah.
And the word comes out that the guy was screaming Britain first. So now the polls are reversing. This is why there are always the wild cards, why you cannot predict the future. Again, you can make forecasts and see where things are going, but nobody can predict the wild cards.
Gerald, when we come back, I want you to talk about the possibility of another 2008-type bubble. Could it burst? What's next? We'll be back. Ah, what a great song. Hey, that's my closing song that I sing at my live stage show events, and we're going to have one this Saturday in St. Louis at the Lindenwood University, and we're in the final countdown for that. Full information at coasttocoastam.com. Yes, they do take walk-ins, but it's so much better for you to just get your tickets online and look at the seats you want. Just go to coasttocoastam.com under the highlight reel. You'll see the little picture there about the event. Click it and then do what you have to do, and we'll see you Saturday in St. Louis at our major live stage show event. And welcome back to Coast with Gerald Celente, TrendsResearch.com. Gerald, of course, we had problems in 2001. We had the bubble in 2008. Are we on track for that to happen again?
The world's greatest bubble has been inflated with all of this quantitative easing, zero interest rate policy, and now negative interest rate policy. Look, we just saw this past Wednesday when the Federal Reserve Chair, Janet Yellen, gave an incoherent talk.
You're right.
It made absolutely no sense.
It was like she was sniffing helium or something.
How kind of you. I mean, she goes on to say that the United States economy is on a path of sustainable improvement, and we're confident in the U.S. economy. And then she goes on, you know, to say, quote, "We are quite uncertain about where rates are heading in the longer term." Well, now, if you say things are going so great, now let's put this rate thing into perspective.
Okay.
Right now, we have over $10 trillion worth of government bonds that are giving you back less than what you borrowed, what you bought the bond for, if you return it at maturity. Negative bond yields. You can't make this up because it's never happened in the world before. She brags about the job growth. Well, we had what, 38,000 jobs that we had in May, and they were looking for what, 160,000? And then she brags, well, you know, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. That was only 1 month. Okay, last year they were doing what, about 220-something thousand jobs, 229,000 jobs a month. And now what are we doing? 125,000 jobs a month. So this is since the beginning of the new year.
Yeah.
So there is no recovery. And then you look at the numbers. I'm not making this up. Since 2009, when they began this whole quantitative easing, zero interest rate policy, 95% of the wealth created has gone to the 1%. So those are real numbers. Median household income below 1999 levels. How about over 50% of full-time employees in America, working Americans, are earning less than $30,000 a year? And then you look at the jobs that have been created. Where are they? A lot of them in health. A lot of them in education, a lot of them in social services, right?
Yeah, that's right. Bank America just announced they're going to lop off 8,000 jobs at their banks.
That's right. So those jobs in health, education, social services, that wasn't created because of the Federal Reserve. Those are jobs created because we, the taxpayer, pay for health, education, and social services. And that's a big part of what has been created, along with lousy retail jobs. And I love the word hospitality sector.
Why, Gerald, are housing prices still high and the stock market specifically so high?
The stock market is high because of the quantitative easing and zero interest rate policy. What it's doing, there's no such thing anymore as true price discovery. So what happens is you looked at merger and acquisition activity last year. It was at all-time records because they're borrowing money for nothing. And they're buying up, Microsoft just bought what, LinkedIn?
For $26 billion.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know. And wait, what kind of money is LinkedIn bringing in to buy something like that? So that's why the markets are going up. Here, $70 billion a month is going into stock buybacks. They're not creating anything. They're buying back the stocks. So what this cheap debt has allowed, it's corporate financial reengineering, and you have zero cost carry trades that keep this stock market scheme going. And so the reason the housing market's going up, again, negative interest rate or zero, near zero interest rates, you're looking at mortgage rates really at all-time lows. But where's the housing markets going up? They're going up in the larger cities. Now let's take a look at the larger cities where they're really booming. Miami, New York, San Francisco. Now you look at the luxury end, George, they're down some 20%. And it's around the world, whether it's Singapore, whether it's London, whether it's Hong Kong. The top is collapsing. The retail, the high-end luxury, it rots from the head down. Look at the numbers coming in. They just came in from Neiman Marcus. They were down like 72% in profit. One after another, whether it's Hugo Boss, you look at all the top ones, they're all crashing down. The numbers that they're losing are enormous. Then you look at gold sales in jewelry and diamond sales in jewelry. Way off.
Way off. Huge.
So what's happening is it rots from the head down. And that's what's going on. And we're going back to the Brexit, whether or not to exit the European Union. This is really big. Because if Britain pulls out of the European Union, that's the end of the European Union. It's the end of the euro. They're going to go back to their own currencies.
And what's wrong with that?
It's great.
That's what I thought. Let's take some calls here for you, Gerald, in the time we have left. We go way east of the Rockies, Jane in Worcester, Massachusetts. Hey, Jane, welcome to the show. Jane? Well, there's no Jane in Worcester, but let's try Carla in Queens, New York. Hi, Carla, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Hi, George. Hi, guest.
Hi, his name's Gerald.
Anyway, if... You know, there's a lot of talk about a world economic collapse. You hear this, like, you know, and I question it. I don't understand. Now, if Britain pulls out of the European Union and they become independent, that's one way of salvaging if there is. Do you really believe we could have a world economic collapse or a real collapse in the U.S. dollar?
Look at what's going on. The only reason why any of these economies have gone up is because of central bank intervention. The Chinese have dumped trillions and trillions of yuan into the system to build ghost cities. They're there for everybody to see. The reason why oil prices and other commodity prices are so low is because there's too much supply and not enough demand. You have, look what's going on in Nigeria, what's going on in Venezuela, what's going on in Brazil. All of this hot money that was created with quantitative easing that flew into these emerging markets, now it's flying out as their commodity prices are crashing. And then you look at Japan. Despite three or four years of Abenomics, where they pumped in trillions of yen to boost the economy, the country teeters on recession, going in and out of it, and they can't get out of it. They have negative interest rates. That means if you were to put your money into the bank, you'd have to pay them to put it in there. That's what negative interest rates means, because when the big banks put their money into the central banks, they have to pay to keep it there, because what they're trying to do is to encourage them to loan it out back into the economy, but they're not doing it. You look at Europe, negative interest rates, and then you look at GDP numbers. The GDP numbers stink around the world. What do we have in the United States? 0.8% in the first quarter. One lousy number after another. There is no economy. There's no recovery. A recession is in a lot of people's lives already when you look at the numbers, and when you look at the false numbers, particularly from the Federal Reserve, the labor numbers. You know, we're looking at, they say, we have a 4.7% unemployment rate. Well, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 1.7 million Americans who wanted or were available for work couldn't find any. And once you, 495,000 people dropped off the rolls. Once you drop off the rolls in the USSA, they no longer count you as unemployed.
Now, Gerald, you don't give investment advice on the program, but isn't it a better idea for people? You can't put money in a bank. You're gonna make no money at all, zilch, practically. So you buy some stock in a company that might pay you a 3% dividend. That makes more sense, doesn't it?
Well, that does, and I'm also, from speaking for myself, I keep buying gold.
Yep, you're strong in that.
Yes, and look what happened. You know, just today, gold was well over $1,300 an ounce.
That's a nice bump.
It pulled way back on what happened in the UK with the assassination of that parliamentary member.
Yeah.
But you can see where it's going, because they used to say, why would you want to own gold when you could get interest on your money? You can't get interest on your money anymore.
No,
look,
you can't.
You and I are old enough to remember when people used to retire, they used to put money in a thing called savings accounts. And they used to make enough money after they worked most of their lives to retire in Florida.
I remember little passbook savings books that you'd get from your bank, and you'd bring your $50 in and put it in there, and they'd put it in and stamp it, and you'd look at it, and it was cool. They don't do that anymore, do they?
No, because you're not getting any interest. And when you asked before about, the stock market and what's going on, and I gave you the numbers that the 1% has gotten 95% of the wealth, these low interest rates are a war against savers. They're a war against pensioners. You have no place to put your money. So all it's done, when I said the 95% has gotten all the dough, that's who has been enriched by it at our cost.
Let's go next to Nick in Garden City, New York. Hi, Nick. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, Gerald. Hey, George. How's it going? Gerald,
good, Nick.
The middle class, does it have a future, or is it going to go extinct like the dinosaurs?
Well, the middle class now is a minority in America. No, it doesn't have to be like this. Look what's going on around the world. I mentioned what's going on with the Brexit. Take a trip over to Rome. They're just electing now, it looks like the first time, a member from the Five Star Movement, a woman, she's 37 years old. They're protesting against the two-party system, basically. The same thing's happening in Austria with the Freedom Party. They nearly won. Look what's going on in Germany with the Alternative for Deutschland, the AfD party. Go around the world, the Podemos party, at one country after another, and it goes back to the Brexit again, because people know that they're being pushed down by this globalization trend that has made the multinationals really in control of our lives. Look, there used to be one time when I was a young guy going into the corporate world, you used to be able to climb the corporate ladder. That word is even, that phrase is dead now. It's
blood
been
ladder,
taken,
yeah.
Go back to Obama, who campaigned during the Rust Belt in 2007 and 2008. Folks, we're gonna look at that NAFTA, and we have to revisit it. It's not a good law. And then he's pushing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. What does that do? It gives the multinationals the power over sovereign rights over nations if they don't like what you're doing to a product that they're selling, be it GMOs or anything else. So going back to the middle class, as long as we have a multinational mentality and a globalization mentality, the middle class, let's call it slave landia.
Do these
presidents change once they get elected in office, or are they tricking us from the get-go, Gerald?
George, I began my career at a graduate school running political campaigns in Westchester County, the richest county in America, right north of New York City. I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate. I designed and instructed American politics and campaign technology and taught it at St. John's University. The reason I hated it was because there were liars, cowards, freaks, and fools. It was the worst job I ever had working up in the New York State Senate, watching grown men bow down, suck up, and work their way up to the top.
Yeah.
No, they're liars when they get in. We have to come up with a better name for politicians. It covers up who they really are. And I have to be polite because we're on the air.
I understand.
But I can think of some really words that describe who they are. No, they lie their way into office.
Phil is a first-time caller in Defiance, Ohio. Hi, Phil. Go ahead.
Hi, Gerald. My question kind of for you was, have you ever heard about Zionist or the Protocols of Zion? I've listened to a lot of alternative media, which I've heard you on. And like what I would say Alex Jones calls globalists, I would call Zionist Jews or Jewish supremacists. I look at 9/11, I see Israel's fingerprints all over it. Who owns the media, who owns the banks? And I'm not anti-Semitic in any way, but I do think there's a group of Jewish supremacists, almost the KKK of the Jews, if you would, controlling things. And I get that's a sensitive subject to touch.
Well, it's not sensitive. I mean, there are some people who are Jewish who are heavyweight bankers and industrialists, like just about anybody else. But I do not believe that they were part of 9/11. Go ahead, Gerald.
No, I don't either. In the sense that, are there crooks in every nation? You know, I'll give you an example. Hillary Clinton and Trump calling around for playing the gender card. As I make clear, you know, it doesn't make a difference what color you are, what race, religion, creed, gender. Crooks, crazy people come in all of them, and good people come in all of them too. So I stay away from labeling, anybody responsible for these things, because you could look around and you could see it coming from all ends. As I said, you know, I was right in the thick of the political system, you know, one of the biggest governments in the country. And I was also a government affairs specialist in the chemical industry for several years. You know, with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, Reagan's former assistant treasury secretary, writes our magazine, the Trends Journal. You know, so no, there are crazy people, regardless of who they are. And no, it's not one. There's no grand plan. They don't know what they're doing. When you listen to Janet Yellen, I know we don't have a lot of time, George. I want to read one quote.
Okay, I got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Tell me, what is the worst-case scenario if, in fact, we see real estate prices actually come down substantially across the country? This is 2005, Bernanke. Answer, well, I guess I don't buy your premise. It's particularly unlikely possibility.
We've never
had a decline in house prices on a nationwide basis. We don't have people that know what they're talking about. That's Bernanke just before the bubble burst.
Yep, right there. Gerald, thanks again for being on the program. Gerald's website, of course, trendsresearch.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, a special tribute to six fallen Coast to Coast guests.